you call yourself a socialist?
No.
You've never told a lie in politics?
No.
See, somebody sent me a video actually last Friday, and it had you talking at the socialist youth
Right. Yes.
And you mentioned the word comrade about four times in a minute. What was that about?
It was a rally, and I would have been about 25 years old.
Comrade.
It was in 2009.
Oh, well, I can't remember which country it was in.
Has it changed since those days?
No, not particularly. No.
If you are caught in a lie or caught intentionally misleading the New Zealand public, how would you expect to be held to account?
Well, I actually believe that it is possible to exist in politics without lying.
We drum in that messaging around the dangers of COVID pretty diligently for a full two-week period of sustained propaganda. Sustained propaganda.
88.1 FM, The Wireless Weather.
Morning, Digger. How are you this morning?
I'm very well, thanks. A little sneezy, a little bit sleepy, but, you know, we're getting there slowly.
All right, mate. Well, we've got the weather for you now. Just gone 5 o'clock. Good morning to everyone. I hope you're having a wonderful day. The 16th of April this morning. Welcome to the program. Let's look at the weather. First of all, we've got the extremes. The highest temperature is Auckland and Manukau, 16.2 degrees here at 2 minutes past 5. Twizel's the coldest with 1.5 degrees. At Castle Point, 30 kilometres of wind ripping through there. Not very much, is it really?
Nah. Didn't take the skin off her eyes, buddy.
And the wettest place is New Plymouth Airport, 1.4 millimetres of rain. Temperatures right across the country. The main centre, Stewart Island, 10 degrees, Invercargill, 12. Dunedin's on 10, Timaru a bit nippy there, 4 degrees. Chatham Islands, 10 degrees, Queenstown, 7. On the west coast of the South Island, 9 degrees in Westport and Franz Josef, 10 degrees in Nelson. Blenheim has 17 and Christchurch is sitting on 8 degrees this morning. Across the Cook Strait to the bottom of the North Island at the Wasp Nest there in Wellington, 11 degrees in Wellington, and Masterton 5 degrees, Napier's on 10. Palmerston North 13, New Plymouth 15 this morning. Taupo and Rotorua are both on 11 degrees and 13 degrees. Gisborne 12 degrees, Tauranga 14. Hamilton has 10 degrees this morning, Auckland 16, 13 in Whangarei, and Kaitaia's on 10 degrees. The short forecast valid until midnight tomorrow night in the west from Northland to Manawatu, also Coromandel Peninsula and Tonglanui. Showers becoming isolated this afternoon. For the Bay of Plenty, Taupo and Taihape, mainly fine. A shower or two. Gisborne to Wairarapa, mainly fine. Brief showers possible about the Tararua district. Horowhenua, Kapiti Coast, Wellington, Marlborough and Nelson, mainly fine for you today. Buller and Fiordland, a few showers, but rain, some heavy about Fiordland. Rain spreading elsewhere this afternoon and evening, whilst easing to a few showers in Fiordland and southern Westland. For Canterbury, today, fine at first, apart from early morning fog patches. Scattered showers from afternoon south of Ashburton, possibly heavy. Otago and Southland, rain spreading north this morning and afternoon, possibly heavy in the east and then easing for the south of Dunedin area as well. For the Chatham Islands, mostly cloudy with just a few light showers for you. How about that? That's good. Here's Douglas Murray.
One of the interesting things about the difference between Christianity and Islam, by the way, we have an idiot political class in all of our countries that pretends sometimes for the sake just simply of interfaith dialogue, sometimes simply for the sake of fudging along, and sometimes just because they don't know what they're talking about. They pretend that all religions are basically the same. And, you know, you might practice Christianity, I might practice Islam, and he might practice yoga. And it all comes out the same. It's not true.
Absolutely not true. Well, we're featuring this week Dr. David Martin. It's actually from interviews that were done in a so far two-part documentary, and it's called The Great Setup by Dr. David Martin. You'll find that over now. Where will you find that? I don't know if I know where it is now. Had it there. Oh, well, anyway, let's have a listen to Dr. David Martin.
So I think we're going to get different pathogens. We already said the Nipah craze that was going on in India, and we've got a bunch of other toxins that are being discussed. Apocalypses have been overrated every time they've been promoted. And by the way, human history is filled with apocalypse forecasts, and they all suck. We forget that we have a conscious role to play in this. And if we give the frequency of evil the carrier frequency on which it can transmit, guess what will be transmitted? Evil.
Yeah, Dr. David Martin. Now, I want to tell you that today's the 16th of April. If you're having a birthday today, you make sure you have a good one. 6 minutes past five. Let's have a listen to something that happened on this day in history. Well, let me tell you a little bit about it, first of all. Let me tell you about it. Yes, 16th of April. Let's check this out. Now, a Waikato farmer, Arthur Allen Thomas, was found guilty for the second time of the 1970 murder of his Pukekohe neighbour, Harvey and Jeanette Crewe. Researchers discovered the Crewe's bullet-ridden bodies in the Waikato River 3 months after their disappearance in June 1970. The killer spared their two-year-old daughter, who was found in her cot by her grandfather 5 days after her parents went missing. Originally convicted of double murder in 1971, Thomas protested his innocence and appealed. A protracted legal struggle culminated in a retrial in March 1973. Despite doubts over police evidence, especially a cartridge case found in the Crewe's garden, Thomas was convicted for a second time. Influential books by journalist Pat Booth and David Yallop contributed to a public perception that Thomas's conviction was unjust. In 1979, he received an official pardon after 9 years in jail. In 1980, a royal commission concluded that Thomas had committed an committed an unspeakable outrage by planting the cartridge case that had been key to the original conviction. Thomas received $950,000, equivalent to $5 million in 2020, in compensation. That happened on this day. Now, we've got a little clip from that. It's 8 minutes past five.
Arthur Allen Thomas's future is up in the air tonight after a jury was unable to reach verdict.
Actually, that is the wrong one. I'll give you the right one. Where are you, mate? Where is it? Here you go. This is what we want.
It's one of the most enduring murder mysteries New Zealand's ever had.
The conviction was really questionable. I was concerned because of the attitude of the leading police in the search about they had one person in their sights, and then it seemed that they couldn't get that person, so they just cast around to find somebody else.
The famous question is, who fed Rochelle for 5 days? She doesn't know that, obviously. She was 18 months to 2 years old at the time. Other people have put up their theories of who it might be, conflicting theories, I might add, and answering that question would go a long way to finding out who killed her parents, which is what Rochelle wants to do.
And one of the reasons that this case continues to hold such interest is the circumstances surrounding Jeanette and Harvey's daughter, Rochelle. And Rochelle was 18 months old when her parents were murdered in their family home.
The police thought I'd done it, and they went ahead and did some terrible things outside the law.
I mean, we've had a man wrongfully imprisoned for 10 years, Arthur Allen Thomas. The Royal Commission of Inquiry found that he was framed by the police to get a wrongful conviction.
The minister has written to the Commissioner of Police, and the Commissioner of Police has said to one of his reasonably senior officers, look, get that file and have a look at it and just give me a memo and tell me what you find.
The report concludes that Jeanette and Harvey were probably killed between 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. the previous Wednesday. The review identifies that there is a distinct possibility that Exhibit 350, and that's the brass 22 cartridge that I spoke of, may be fabricated evidence, and that if this is the case, then a member of police would be responsible.
But the trial was just a waste of time. And this shell case, unbelievable. I can understand the jury saying, well, Arthur, you couldn't have been at home. This shell case came out of your garden, was found in the Crewe garden. Found guilty. It was unbelievable.
I mean, a lot of people say, oh, a lot of time's gone past. Why bother looking at it? But there's still a person here whose life has been irrevocably changed by this, and she deserves some answers, and that's Rochelle Crewe.
She asked what further investigative action had been taken following Arthur Thomas's pardon. She also wanted to know why members of the police, Detective Inspector Hutton and Detective Len Johnson, hadn't been prosecuted as a result of the Royal Commission of Inquiry findings. And of course, Rochelle wanted to know who killed her parents.
I mean, yeah, there are lots of unsolved murders out there in New Zealand, and why should you, why should we focus on this one? And that's a good question, but at the end of the day, there's just so much speculation flying around this. It's hurting her, it's hurting her family.
If someone was to come forward today with credible evidence and information that was reliable, we would certainly consider it. We owe it to New Zealand, we owe it to Rochelle, and we owe it to Jeanette and Harvey.
You're listening to The Wireless with Grant Edwards and Digger Davidson. It's 11 minutes past five. Let's have a look and see what else happened on this day, 16th of April. In 1892, the New Zealand Rugby Football Union was founded. It grew in popularity in New Zealand. It became necessary to standardise the administration of the game in the colony. Despite some opposition, a New Zealand Rugby Football Union was founded. Also on this day, we had the sinking of the Titanic. News of the Titanic sinking reaches New Zealand. Although no New Zealanders were on board, the largest passenger ship, when it sank in the chilly North Atlantic with appalling loss of life, the country followed the news closely. I think I've got something on that, haven't we, mate?
I did have it, but it wouldn't import.
Okay. All right, well, let's go back to Dr. David Martin and have a listen to him for a moment or two, and then we'll bring you some news from the newspapers across the country.
It turns out that if you go back and look at data from Wuhan, people died in Wuhan before December of 2019. I don't know if that comes as a shock, but it's a city, and people died in the city. Just like people die in nursing homes and they die in cities all over the world. And this whole story of the Wuhan virus falls apart very quickly when you realize that we have not yet had in the ICTV, which is the International Committee of the Taxonomy of Viruses, we have not yet had in any other independent review evidence of a collected pathogen. Do we know that people died in Wuhan? Yes. Do we know they died of an atypical pneumonia? Yes. Do we know that they died of atypical pneumonia that appeared to be associated with some of the people working at the Wuhan Institute of Virology? Yes. But here's the kicker. Why was it that the same Ralph Baric at UNC Chapel Hill, the same Ralph Baric who said that in 2016, the Wuhan Institute of Virology Virus 1 was poised for human emergence in the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, why is it he's the guy we asked to confirm whether this was actually man-made or from nature? Why would we ask the perpetrator of the crime to cover his own tracks? Conveniently, nature backed itself into a story we published in 2016. And we're supposed to believe that. We're supposed to believe that randomly, a bat and a pangolin and a civet and a God knows what all else got together in December, went to a wet market, and started infecting people. That's the story we're supposed to believe. There was no December event in Wuhan. Just like there was no any other event anywhere else. The thing that was killing people was a weapon that was being distributed. It was not a transmissible thing. And how do I know that? I know that because the engineering for SARS 1.0, which, by the way, as you'll recall, killed almost no one, but was supposed to be a virus that was going to take down the world, and SARS 2.0 has the same modification, which is infectious but replication defective, the thing that was in the patent. And why is replication defective important? It turns out for a virus to achieve what the viral model dictates, it has to go into the cell, it has to replicate, and then it has to be transmitted. But if you take out its replication capability, you know what it isn't anymore? It's not a virus. It's a weapon. When you say in September 18th of 2019, the accidental or intentional release of a lethal respiratory pathogen, let's just slow it down for a minute. You go, well, hold on a minute. Release is a really dangerous word in that sentence. That's not, oops, it leaked. Right, release is actually a term that implies intention. It implies distribution. It doesn't imply that somehow or another something just got away. We have to get really clear on the facts, because there's facts and then there is the media hype that was created. And I encourage everybody who doesn't listen to this carefully to go back and re-look at that Event 201 video. The script in that video is the same thing as the script in December. Right? Suddenly there's an outbreak of a thing and it's coming from China and it's a respiratory virus and it happens to be coronavirus and you're going to have to get N95 masks and you're going to have to do social distancing and we're going to have to go after misinformation and disinformation. All of that is in the October 2019 desktop exercise. And lo and behold, they recite the exact same script in 2020.
Dr. David Martin there, and you can see him over at MarkishMDSubstack.com. You can see those interviews in full. It's 16 minutes past five. Good morning to you. And we're over at the Otago Daily Times this morning. News Hub staff, they've called an important business update meeting. Staff to be for the soon to close newsroom at News Hub. They've been called to a meeting on Tuesday, according to News Hub. Now, a Christchurch rescue helicopter targeted with a laser. The police are searching for a person who pointed a green laser at a rescue helicopter while it was landing at Christchurch Hospital on Sunday night. A beach dig linked to a man's disappearance during the Cyclone Gabrielle. Police are searching a section of the beach north of Napier in relation to the disappearance of Gisborne man Joseph Ahuriri during the Cyclone Gabrielle. Stag killed after a vehicle attack on deer. A vehicle attack on deer. The vehicle must have attacked it. No, someone drove over a deer, ran over it and they killed it. The stag was hit by the vehicle and then killed in a targeted attack on a mob of deer near Nelson, police say. Long COVID sufferers fear benefit rule change. People suffering from long COVID are scared that they will face penalties under the coalition's government benefits reset. A government told civilians could be killed in military the government was warned that Yemeni civilians could be killed in the operation in which New Zealand is involved to protect shipping in the Red Sea. Christchurch business sticks to its guns over a billboard claim. A Christchurch arms and hunting business appears to be sticking to its guns, defying an advertising standards authority demand to remove a misleading billboard. That's Gun City. New pet bond aims to make renting with animals easier. The government has announced a two-week pet bond, an obligation for tenants to pay for damages their animals cause in a bid to make renting with an animal easier. COVID-19, New Zealand bucked COVID life expectancy trends. The first 2 years of the COVID pandemic undid earlier success in increasing life expectancy, except for a handful of countries, New Zealand among them. Rainbow Crossing vandal to pay $16,000. A man charged with vandalising a rainbow crossing at Auckland's Karangahape Road has pleaded guilty and been ordered to pay about $16,000 in reparations. School classroom contaminated with asbestos. Two school classrooms were extensively contaminated with the most dangerous type of asbestos after the wall linings were taken off without any testing. Government won't commit to emergency housing support past June. Funding for support services designed to help people out of an emergency housing due to expire in 2 months. And the government will not commit to extending it. And a Carterton ticket wins $30 million. One lucky lotto winner woke up to $30 million in his bank. Oh, it won't be straight away in his bank. That was over the weekend. And gosh, that's good, isn't it? $30 million. What would you do with $30 million? 11 people have been hurt in the fire apartment block. Now, we're getting down to old news there, so we'll give that a miss. And we'll move across to the Wellington paper, The Post. Manukau, is a modern makeover enough or is trouble coming? After a strange birth, an awkward upbringing, the Manukau city centre is now getting some much needed love and attention. Kevin Morkay has that story. And police apologise for accidentally spiking a woman's tyres on the motorway. Taylor Davis was on her way to Aunt's Tangi when her car was spiked by mistake. It took 3 months for police to pay her back more than $1,000. Sue Hazelwood never fed her kids spaghetti bolognese. Never ever. The former property mogul turned chef always cooked high-end for her six kids And at one point, her weekly grocery bill was a whopping $1,500. Carly Gooch has that story. And prisons increasingly using body scanning technology instead of strip searches. Corrections say it's on its way to having 10 out of its 17 prisons using high-tech body imaging scanners. And no gears, thanks. We're easy drivers. Manukau cars are on the way out as, rather, I beg your pardon, Manukau. Manual cars are on the way out as drivers upshift to automatics in droves. Didn't know that. I think it's important to actually try and get your license when you're young with a manual car. Then you can drive everything, can't you? You're allowed to drive, except for a truck, of course. Got to get your class 4. But I think you can drive small trucks. You can go and hire one of those if you're moving house. All right, let's move across to One News and see what's happening there. Fair go. How long should a wedding ring last? Two couples have come to Fair Go saying that the rings they purchased from Michael Hill Jeweller haven't stood the test of time. There's a story there. And what does regularly attending school actually mean? The government has set some ambitious targets for lifting the number of students regularly going to school. What does regular attendance look like? They've got a story over there as well. We're a bit short on stories, it looks like. It does look like they're a wee bit short of stories. Over at News Hub, they've got a live stream video there of a second stabbing attack hit Sydney. Multiple reports wounded at church service. Goodness me. It looks like an Orthodox church too, by the headgear of the priest up the front there. And a game changer for motor neuron disease, soon available in New Zealand. Might bring you that story a wee bit later on. Those are the stories from News Hub, soon to be defunct, although there is a meeting apparently being called. So it would be interesting to see what happens during the day. 24 minutes past five, we're over at Radio New Zealand, New Wellington Tunnel. An astonishing misunderstanding of transport priorities. A new underground mega tunnel in the capital would be a colossal waste of money, opponents of the government's suggestion for the tunnel are telling people. Other stories, builders, they pull the pin as recession, high interest rates hit construction industry. And Joel Cauchy, tormented soul, a father says, after Bondi Junction stabbing. News Hub staff have called for an important business update today. So we'll bring you that story if we hear anything between now and 7 o'clock. And fishers more vigilant after on-boat cameras introduced, according to industry leader. Four people have been injured in an alleged stabbing incident in Sydney. A man's in custody after at least four people were injured in an alleged stabbing incident at a church in Sydney's southwest on Monday night. School principals on the truth behind truancy. The detail has a story there. I think it's a podcast. Principals are urging the government to take care in the way truancy data is published, saying it's if it's just going to be another set of league tables, it won't be helpful. And town may only have a few weeks of water left. The town's water supply may have only about 4 to 6 weeks capacity left, with concerns about the remaining quality. Well, I better tell you what town that is. It's Lawrence in Otago. The Otago town's water supply may only have about 4 to 6 weeks capacity. The Clutha District Council has applied for consent to divert a stream to bypass the Phoenix Dam and ensure Lawrence's water supply, notifying the regional council last week. The Phoenix Dam was lowered by 3 metres as part of flood protection work that started last November, dropping to 4 metres as water continued to be pumped into for the town's water supply. Before it was bolstered a bit by recent rain. Deputy Chief Executive Jules Witt said there is an inadequate supply for the catchment, creating a high degree of risk to the town's water supply. He said the urgency of this work is that we predict the bottom 25% of the water within the dam will be unusable because of poor quality. He went on to say that he also estimates that we have around 4 to 6 weeks capacity remaining, and it will be subject to incoming flows such as the recent rainfall, which is why we need to get moving on the construction of a bypass. The town's under stage 3 water restrictions to reduce demand as a precaution. The council notified the Otago Regional Council on the 9th of April that work on the bypass would start immediately before approval under Section 330 of the Resource Management Act 1991. That's what's happening there in Lawrence. Other stories, the outcome of Luxon's meeting with Singapore MP. They've got a story over there under politics, if you go to rnz.co.nz. And what the public sector job cuts mean for Wellington small business. They've got another story there, which could be well worth having a look at. Let's go to international news now and the big stories. Oh, hang on, haven't refreshed on that one. Let me just double check. The latest, world leaders urge Israel not to retaliate for the Iranian drone and missile strike.
You know, yesterday.
Yes.
You said drone attack.
Did I? Really?
Yeah, you said a drone and missile attack. I thought that was a bit queer. I was going to pull you up on it, but, you know, you made so many mistakes yesterday, I thought, well, I don't want to wreck you, knock your confidence.
Well, thanks, Digger. You're a good bloke, aren't you? Yeah, if you could just go outside with that cigarette, please. Thank you very much. It's 27 minutes past five. And let's go across to have a look at the regions now. Europe, Ukraine's foreign minister says Israel's response to an Iranian aerial attack shows what Kiev needs. Expert groups say abortion in Germany should be decriminalised during pregnancy's first 12 weeks. And a trial of former Syrian general over alleged role in war crimes starts in Stockholm. And finally, for Europe, the birthplace of the Olympics, the performers at flame lighting ceremony feel a pull of the ancient past. Asia. Singapore MP Lee, he's to step down on May the 15th and hand the power to his deputy. More morning coffee may be more than 500,000 years old. Oh, really? Your morning coffee may be more than 500,000. Oh, I don't think so. Australian police probe why man's stabbed six people to death in the Sydney Mall targeting women. An operator of Japan's wrecked Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant prepares to restart another plant. Over to Latin America now. Unfazed by danger and power, Guatemalan cardinals keep up fight for migrants and the poor. Argentina's populist president meets billionaire, oh, we had that song news, isn't it? Elon Musk in Texas, yep. And Pope Francis, he sides with the Peruvian villagers who accuse Catholic groups of trying to steal their land. That's old news too. Transitional church in Haiti to choose new leaders in formerly established amid gang violence. Looking at the Middle East, Israeli military renews warnings to Palestinians not to return to war-torn northern Gaza. Israel orders eviction of Palestinian family from East Jerusalem property, reigniting a legal battle. World donors pledge $2.1 billion in aid for war-stricken Sudan to ward off famine, and sudden heavy rain in Oman kills at least 17, including schoolchildren whose bus was overtaken. In Africa, world paid little attention to Sudan's war for a year. Now, aid groups warn of mass death from hunger. And young Ugandans tangle in the... Oh, no, this is old. We've got old news here. So we'll give it another refresh. Something's happened to AP. They're not keeping up with the news. No, it's nothing changing over there. So why don't we look at Australian news? Bruce Lehman's defamation case captivated tens of thousands, but nearly didn't happen. For the first time, a court has made findings against Bruce Lehman about the dust from Monday's judgment in his defamation case is yet to settle. Sydney's bishop, among four allegedly stabbed at church in Sydney during a live stream mass. Oh dear, that'll all be filmed there. Bishop Mari Emmanuel is in critical but stable condition following the attack on Monday evening at Christ the Good Shepherd Church in Wakeley. A man accused of murdering William Holdback at Wellland faces Adelaide Magistrates Court. Liam Slan, who was accused of murdering William Holdback at the Welland End on Wednesday morning, faces the Adelaide Magistrates Court via a video link. And a wife reacts to husband's decision to chase Bondi Junction killer. She was very angry. She must have been there shopping with him. A man who chased the Bondi Junction attacker through the shopping centre says a police officer told Joel Calci to drop his knife several times before shooting him. Five key takeaways from Bruce Lehman's failed defamation case in the federal court. Former Liberal staffer Bruce Lehman his defamation case against Network 10 and journalist Lisa Wilkinson over coverage of Brittany Higgins' rape allegations has failed, and they've got the key points over there. You can find them at abc.net.au. And who is Lawrence Wong, the man poised to become Singapore's fourth prime minister on a $2.5 million salary? In the more than 58 years since Singapore has granted its independence, Australia has seen 17 prime ministers, while the nation, the island nation, has just three. So what can be expected from Lawrence Wong when the deputy leader takes over from Lee Hsien Loong next month? And Ben was falsely accused of stabbing six people to death. Here's how the falsehood spread. For 14 hours over the weekend, Sydney University student Ben Cohen was one of the most reviled men on the internet, falsely accused of the Bondi Junction stabbing. And here's how the lie spread around the world. abc.net.au has the details on that. All right, it's 29 minutes away from six.
So I think there's a lot of problems in terms of how we have been conditioned to take on information. And I think that as a society, we have been conditioned to accept a fear-based narrative without question. You'll recall, as I will, and I'm dating myself, but you'll recall when we were told that we should crawl under school desks in elementary school and hide under our desks in the event of a nuclear attack from Russia. Now, you'll remember those desks. They had a wooden top, they had a little metal casement, and then four metal stands. And somehow as children, we were conditioned to say that in the event of a nuclear blast, we were going to somehow be saved under our desks. Really? Does anybody know anything about radiation? Does anybody know anything about how nuclear weapons work? Because hiding under a desk merely means that your corpse is preserved so when the Pompeii diggers come back to dig you up, they'll find nice little encapsulated children huddled under melted metal desks. It'll be phenomenal, and it'll be great for a museum somewhere. What a nonsensical thing to do. But why did that practice become ubiquitous across the country? It was to instill fear, allows you to respond to an authoritative impulse. And I can guarantee you, every single person who is a parent over the age of 40 knows that they were conditioned to accept, be afraid, set any logic aside, and if the authority tells you to do it in fear, do it. And by the way, if you were like me, being a little smartass, because I was in elementary school, when you pointed out how stupid that was, you know what you got? Sent to the principal's office. See, this programming has been around for a long time, and we pretend like it's, oh my gosh, how did this happen in 2019? No, come on. We have been habituated into the belief that if the people in authority who architect the fear tell you A, to be afraid, and then B, what to do when you're afraid, then you do it. And if we as a society stopped living in the fear narrative, the signal couldn't transmit.
That's right. 25 minutes away from 6, let's go to Radio New Zealand and pick up the 5 o'clock bulletin.
RNZ News at 5. Ngā mihi o te ata, I'm Peter McIlwain. The first ever criminal trial of a former US president has begun in New York. The case against Donald Trump gets underway with jury selection. He denies falsifying business records to cover up a hush money payment to an adult film star, Stormy Daniels. The BBC's Neda Taufik is in New York.
Today is the formal start of the trial, but it begins jury selection when hundreds of New Yorkers from Manhattan will be gathered here and will be whittled down to just a jury of 12 individuals and six alternatives. Donald Trump will be there in court through that entire process. The judge will have them first answer a questionnaire that runs 42 questions long, each question with subsets, and it walks the jury through their consumption of media, if they've ever been a supporter of Donald Trump or attended any of his rallies.
The cost of slashing public servants at a single government department has already exceeded $6 million. The Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment is among agencies axing jobs as part of the coalition's public service cuts. MBIE has so far paid 138 staff redundancy payouts totalling about $6.3 million. That figure is set to increase as the ministry has confirmed it is axing almost 300 jobs and is expected to announce further layoffs. It's not yet known how much redundancies across the wider public service will cost. MBIE is the first department to reveal how much it has spent so far. The Finance Minister's office has also confirmed Nicola Willis has not received advice on the estimated price tag. Crown Law is looking into how WorkSafe undertakes prosecutions under health and safety laws. The workplace watchdog has faced intense criticism for years, accused of being too soft on lawbreakers. It has been cutting jobs and activities for months, but promised the number of its investigators would not be reduced. Crown Law says its review is expected to be completed before the end of June. It says no decision has been made on whether the report will be made public. The Hastings Mayor hopes the government will help pay to fix its cyclone-wrecked roads and soften a potential financial blow for ratepayers. Hastings District Council has floated a 25% rates hike as part of its draft long-term plan. 8% is to pay for cyclone recovery work like fixing roads and bridges and buying out Category 3 homes that are no longer safe to live in. Mayor Sandra Hazelhurst says she hopes the final change in rates won't be as steep if the government agrees to contribute towards the $700 million needed to fix the district's roads. She says the council may need to wait until the government's budget in May to find out whether that will happen. Warner Brothers Discovery will be talking to News Hub staff this morning in what it's called an important business update. Staff were sent an email inviting them to the update yesterday evening. RNZ understands News Hub staff are anxiously awaiting the outcome of the meeting. Last week, Warner Brothers Discovery confirmed that all News Hub operations will close and 250 people will lose their jobs with the final 6 p.m. news bulletin on July the 5th. But there have been reports that the company is considering proposals from other media companies. Warner Brothers has refused to comment. And in sport, led by new centurion Kimiora Poi, the Tactics defeated the Steel 52-35 in the first Southern Derby of the 2024 ANZ Netball Premiership in Christchurch last night. The result meant the Steel's losing streak stretched out to 18 games. And Barcelona manager Javi Fernandez said on Monday the side is ready for a battle against Paris Saint-Germain in the return leg of their Champions League quarter-final, adding that his players are willing to suffer in order to advance. That's the news.
Thanks very much, Peter. And 26 minutes away from 6, that report brought to you by the all-nighter announcer from Radio New Zealand. You can find Radio New Zealand at rnz.co.nz. Right, let's have a song. What's your favourite?
Well, I like my favourite's Toby Keith, because he passed away, and he's done one with Willie Nelson, who seems to be outliving everybody.
Somebody been shot, somebody's been abused, somebody blew up a building, somebody stole a car, somebody got away, somebody didn't get too far, yeah, they didn't get too far.
Grandpappy told my pappy back in my day, son, a man had to answer for the wicked that he done. Take all the rope in Texas, find a tall old tree, round up all of them bad boys, hang them high in the street, for all the people to see.
That justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses. We got too many gangsters doing dirty deeds.
Too much corruption and crime in the streets.
It's time the long arm of the law put a few more in the ground.
Send them all to their maker and he'll settle them down.
You can bet he'll settle them down. Cause justice is the one thing he should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
And we'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, saying, whiskey for my men, beer for my horses. Whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
This is former
one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
And we'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses. Singing whiskey for my men, on my horses.
Toby Keith with Willie Nelson there, Beer for My Horses, Whiskey for My Men. It's a good song, isn't it? This morning and this week, we're going to be featuring Dr. David Martin from the series of interviews that he did. It's called The Great Awakening. No, it's not. It's called The Great Setup. The Great Awakening is another one by Mickey Willis. And he also did a documentary with Mickey Willis. What was that one called now? Plandemic. That's right, he did that. That's well worth having a look at. We've got more of David Martin coming up this morning. Now we're over with Seymour Rocks, and the journalist there is Robin Westerner, and I've got a report from him right now. It says here, alert, 24-hour war cabinet decision, attack the nuclear plants, prepare for total war.
This is former National Security Advisor John Bolton telling you exactly what is about to happen next. Listen up.
So I think among the many targets Israel should consider, this is the opportunity to destroy Iran's nuclear weapons program. And I hope President Biden is not trying to dissuade Prime Minister Netanyahu from doing that.
Okay, so number one, Joe Biden is certainly not trying to discourage Netanyahu from doing that. If he was trying to discourage that, he would not be enabling the Israelis with weapons, funding, intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, and acting as a goalie, as a goaltender, defending against a volley of missiles that is going to come Israel's way once they do retaliate. So no, this whole facade of there being discourse amongst the upper echelons, be they Israeli or American, everybody is 110% aligned. The Israelis knew that when they attacked the Iranian consulate, that this would be a provocative enough act that Iran would be compelled to respond directly by attacking Israel, and this would provide Israel the license that they need to finally, once and for all, start a big war with Iran. Now, even myself, as sensational and hyperbolic as I might be at times, I was astounded that they leapfrogged over Hezbollah in Lebanon and went right to Iran. Back when I made that prediction on January 30th that we would be in a war with Iran before the election, I say that in the first 10 seconds of the video, I thought that first they would have to drum up unrest and start a war with Lebanon or Hezbollah, and that would pull the entire region in, and that eventually Iran would attack Israel. I was doubtful that Iran was going to attack Israel right up until the point that it happened, okay? Because it seemed almost as if the Israelis were just kind of talking this up to scare their population into accepting more draconian style laws, and that they did. They were able to suppress protests and all the rest. And Bibi now has realized that, hey, all we have to do is keep this war going and then the protesters who are organizing these protests will go along and they will suspend, as they did over the weekend, their activities, almost like a self-imposed martial law. So indeed, the Israelis knew that this was going to happen. The ultimate end goal, as the Chariots of Fire exercises that were practiced, I think it was a couple years ago, among many other exercises that simulate attacking Iranian nuclear facilities, that is the end goal. John Bolton is effectively the mouthpiece for the Israeli war hawks. And this idea that, you know, the Biden administration or that the Americans aren't going to enable this behavior, if that were true, they could easily pull certain funding. They could say, no, we're not going to provide you with all these fighter jets that you're going to need in order to do it. So this idea that Israel is not going to respond, I mean, I'm hearing some pundits say that. That is preposterous. This is exactly what they want. This is exactly what they need. Okay, this is a golden opportunity because, wouldn't you know it, only 24 hours after something, I would say, the most historical event since the beginning of the Ukraine war. Okay, and that's crazy because, of course, in the last 5 years, we're just bombarded with these unprecedented events one after another. But what happened yesterday was, you know, historically unprecedented. Iran attacking Israel, not just with one missile, but with the largest volley of surface-to-surface missiles ever, okay? And there's already people who've become complacent and stricken with that good old normalcy bias, who think, oh, maybe nothing bad is going to happen. You know, the Bitcoin whales dumped yesterday, and now they're already starting to buy back in because they think, okay, the Israeli war cabinet is going to meet and mull this over for the next 24 hours, and they're probably not going to respond. They're probably going to leave it there. Now, understand that this is the golden opportunity. Okay, people are saying, oh, gas prices aren't going up. Gas prices aren't going to go up right away. For one, that's a refinement issue. So even if oil prices were to shoot up immediately, that doesn't mean that gas prices are going to immediately shoot up overnight. Now, they might if, you know, refineries start going offline and, you know, there starts to get a shooting match with the refineries in the Middle East. But you need to understand that this is the golden opportunity to get prepped, because everything is about to get more expensive. There's going to be this period of delay. And I sincerely can't believe that gold futures right now are only trading slightly above where they were yesterday. And I think oil futures are the same as of now. Let me see. Yeah, oil futures are, these aren't futures. This is what oil's trading at right now. Crude oil is barely trading above what it was yesterday. Now, you can interpret that as, yeah, nothing is ever going to happen, right? And you can interpret that as everything is just fine and that the plan is for Israel to not respond. But I think that would be an incredibly foolish bet at this point in time. I mean, we are certainly risk off, to say the least, and certainly, you know, not risk on, we'll say. But the war cabinet is about to meet in the next 24 hours. And I think that they are going to retaliate. And the problem is that the Iranians have already pledged that if the Israelis commit to a retaliation, that this strike is going to be tenfold greater than the last. Now, in terms of the actual damage that was done, there's a lot of debate already about, well, did they actually, was this a successful campaign or not? We need to understand that the same playbook is being executed. The one that has been executed in Ukraine, where they downplay the number of hits, where they talk about how incompetent the adversary is. They're talking about how, you know, half the missiles, which is complete and utter bullshit, fell into the ocean or didn't fire properly, and on and on and on. The same stuff. Soon they're going to be talking about how the Iranians are running out of weapons, okay? So the same playbook and minimizing the losses. So even though we're seeing, I can't remember the exact number, but there was about 20 recorded hits, okay, of video footage that recorded direct hits, different strikes that were recorded. They're saying only 7 missiles hit, even though there was official reports that 15 targeted one
air base as well as a intelligence facility in the Golan Heights, which apparently was very important. Now, without the help of the Americans, the Jordanians, the UK, and everybody else who partook in the defense, Israel's systems would be easily overwhelmed. And I think this is what the point that the Iranians were trying to make, that look, it took us 300 of our, you know, crappy drones that we fire anyways, because we know those are going to be shot down. They're going to eat up your air defense, so we can get in these cruise missiles and ICBMs, and possibly not ICBMs, but ballistic missiles, and hypersonic missiles potentially, although they didn't use any of those, they claim. You know, we can easily overwhelm your missile defense. And if we wanted to, we could fire a volley that was 10 times greater. So as I said yesterday, the fact that they've already successfully had hits, even though the Israelis are saying the damage is minimal, there's mixed reports of that, is a sign that indeed, if they wanted to, they could ratchet this up a lot. And if Israel goes through with this counterstrike on the Iranian nuclear facilities, they're preparing a whole spectrum, a smorgasbord of possible retaliatory options, they're claiming, then we are going to see, I mean, this is already an escalation. Let's make no mistake. It's not about whether or not we're going to see an escalation. The escalation just happened. You know, the markets are completely manipulated, and public opinion is very manipulated. Right now, they're playing on a psychological principle of learned helplessness with people in the markets that we've become so fickle, and the biofeedback loop that we have with the media now, we've become so desensitized that there's this massive shock and selling out right when something bad happens. But if something bad doesn't happen for 6 or 8 hours after that, everybody grows complacent once again. And because of FOMO, because we have a one-to-one, and I think this wouldn't have happened like in World War II, where you had to kind of sit and think and mull things over and think more strategically. But because we have an immediate feedback loop with Market Watch and all of the stock tickers and the crypto tickers and the commodities tickers, because of that, we are basing our decisions on very short-term data sets and possible outcomes. So we're not thinking things through. This is going to escalate, okay? We said it was going to escalate back when I made that prediction on January 30th, but I didn't believe that we would leapfrog. I didn't believe that we would leapfrog Lebanon. I can't believe that Iran attacked Israel last night. And there's already people who are adapted to that new plateau of escalation like it's no big deal. And there's already people in the comment section saying, you know, see, nothing bad is going to happen. Gas prices are still the same. Well, let's see what happens. Okay, let's see what happens. I hope, but because we know that Israel provoked the Iranians into doing this attack so to provide them justification to go and take out Iranians' nuclear facilities, how does this not escalate? Getting to the data for today, the Israeli War Cabinet is going to be deciding in the next 24 hours. They're saying by Monday they're going to make a decision with respect to how they're going to respond. I don't know if they're going to disclose that to the public. I don't see why you would, but this day and age, it's kind of a clown show, so you just never know. Spanning from potential strikes on Iran to refraining from military action altogether, they say, which is highly doubtful, will be a deliberated upon in the upcoming War Cabinet meeting. The Israeli President Isaac Herzog has said that this large-scale attack on Israel was a declaration of war. Well, I would say attacking the Iranian consulate was probably really the declaration of war, but really that's a subjective demarcation line that you can draw in the sand at will. Now, the possible targets range from Iranian command and control to critical infrastructure to their nuclear facilities to military bases. It's hard to say exactly what's going to happen, but immediately during the War Cabinet meeting, they approved the strikes, and rumblings on social media initiated by Israeli Channel 14, which is a news media agency there, which is typically quite reputable and ahead of the curve, said that an immediate response with strikes inside Iran was approved by a clear majority of the Israeli war cabinet, but canceled at the last minute after a phone call between Biden and Netanyahu. Now, here's the thing, guys. Nose is running here. Does a war benefit the Biden administration? We have to really think about this. A small enough war? No, because most of Biden's voting base are not going to approve of any backing of the Israelis, at least not in the offensive sort. There's still enough padding there in the progressive left to provide Israel the defense that it needs, which of course, eventually, look, defense is offense. If your defense enables a country to offend, then you are, you know, essentially, what do they say, you're complicit in the hostilities, okay? But if there's a war big enough, then you potentially have a situation where not only will, you know, the likelihood of an incumbent president being reelected once again increases, because of course most presidents during wartime are reelected, it could even get so severe and so extreme that it may cause a postponement of the election. Now, I personally think that would cause a civil war, so I don't think that's going to happen. But you could see something happen if Biden's even going to be the guy. I mean, they could, you know, pull him out at the last minute and put somebody else in there. Who knows what they have planned? But this could go both ways. But what I'm trying to say is a war that's big enough would actually be to Biden's benefit. A war that's too small and not properly timed will not be to Biden's benefit, okay? So I think that if they're going to do this, if Biden is definitely on board, and I don't believe for a second that if the Americans truly were, and I say Americans, I'm talking about the upper echelons, not my American viewers that I love. And when I say America, I mean Canada, because you guys are the boat. We're like, we're tethered to your sinking ship, regardless of what our political differences might be. It's all the same. So the upper echelons, I don't think that they're disaligned at all. They're 110% aligned. It's just a matter of playing this whole good cop, bad cop rule for the cameras. So we're about to see in the next 24 hours exactly what the course of action will be. But of course, the Israelis never notified anybody that they were going to attack the Iranian consulate. So don't expect them to tell you exactly what they're going to do next. It's likely going to be more sabotage, you know, espionage, stuff which is done under the radar, attacks, cyber attacks, things of that nature. But we will see something kinetic as well, I do believe. There are some Western officials that expect that Israel will respond very quickly. Three officials also indicated, while at the same time indicating that they thought only 50% of Iran's missiles properly fired and that the rest misfired, they also think that Israel is going to act independently, irrespectively of the advice of the White House. Now, in terms of the attack itself, you know, there's all kinds of commentary on the effectiveness of this attack. But again, just remember that throughout the Ukraine war, they've lied to us about how effective the Russian strikes have been. They told us, you know, they played the whole Russians are idiots card, and Russians are running out of weapons card, and the Russians aren't hitting any of their targets card, and they're going to do the exact same thing here. We're going to see the fog of war incredibly thick, and eventually they're going to impose restrictions on people, you know, taking pictures of and posting videos of various attacks for national security purposes. I do believe it's going to be a little bit more difficult to do that. Apparently, right now in Israel, the flights out of the country are quite busy. I mean, when you have a country that is full of dual citizens to other countries who can freely come and go as they please, it's kind of a choice whether you have to be patriotic or not. It's not in some other countries like Ukraine. I mean, you can't leave. So people are going to be faced with that situation, knowing that the Netanyahu government is about to ramp this up and possibly go for broke. And let's not forget that they still have to deal with the Rafah invasion that has now been conveniently put on hold. They've called up another couple of brigades. Of course, there's still stuff escalating on the northern border. So Israel is about to, you know, it's a powder keg that's about to be ignited. and it is ignited. Make no mistake, this is an escalation. Don't let anybody try to downplay for a second what has just happened here. This is profoundly significant. This has never before happened in history. So just keep that in mind when you're doing your preparedness planning this week. In fact, I was talking to a friend the other day, and I was kind of upset because I'm thinking to myself, you know, I'm almost in this property that I'm supposed to be in. It's a rural property, and I'm not set up at all yet. And this happened too soon. You know, I want this to happen years from now. I don't want it to happen at all, but if it has to happen, I want to postpone it as long as possible. But here we are. It looks like every day that goes by from this point forward is a gift for you to prepare. And this will be viewed as the golden opportunity right now, where people are still stricken with this normalcy bias in spite of the fact that Iran just attacked Israel. Okay? I mean, 3 weeks ago, this would be unthinkable. 3 weeks ago, even though I made that prediction on January 30th, where I said that Iran was going to attack Israel before, or not Iran was going to attack, but that we'd be in a war with Israel before, or Israel would be in a war with Iran before the election, I didn't necessarily know how the sequence of events would unfold. But, you know, here we are. It's happened. Okay? There's the only thing that has to happen now is Israel's response, which they're going to respond. But this is a whole new precedent, because what this is also saying is that now every time that Israel pushes Iran's buttons, they're going to respond in this way. And Israel is saying, well, we can't allow that to happen. We have to do a counterstrike. Well, if they do that, Iran has threatened to fire 1,000 missiles and drones, so 10 times more or less the, well, it was 300 combined, 300 old drones, old rockets. The Iranians are saying they're using all their old stuff. They're doing the same thing that they did with the Russians, but they have, that the Russians did. But they do have, they have said that they're going to do an attack which was 10 times greater than this one should the Israelis respond. Okay? According to the former Central Commander Chief, Iran could not replicate last night's attack tonight. If they had to, Iran is relatively weaker than it was yesterday. So they got another Ben Hodges-type character in there to make the public convinced that Iran are a bunch of fools and that Israel, a country which is, what is it, like 36 times smaller in terms of geography, it is 10 times smaller in terms of its population. It is 4 times smaller in terms of its gross domestic product, in terms of purchasing power parity. And, I mean, on every metric, with the exception of the nuclear weapons and with the exception that the Americans are providing them defenses and are on their side, you know, I mean, this is a very one-sided fight when you really look at it, with the exception of nuclear weapons. Now, if we presume that Iran already has nuclear weapons, then that could be, you know, a game changer. And that means it's game over and it's lights out. And let's not forget that the amount of money that was spent just yesterday, people are only calculating the cost of the missile defense itself, which is over $1 billion. You also have to factor in the cost of having all of that defense equipment, those warships, and, you know, all of the military, you have to pay all the military and all of the infrastructure that you build out and the maintenance and the you know, just the diminishing of your systems, having to use them over and over and to maintain them. This all takes its toll. This all costs even more money. So we're talking about billions of dollars that this one defensive effort to defend against 300 of these drones and missiles, which probably costs the Iranians, you know, a few million bucks. And you also have to think about, from here forward, the cost to create another interceptor is only going to increase. So they may have had interceptors in stockpile that they used to intercept this missile volley last night. But to produce those again is going to cost way more than the one they just used because of inflation, because of the supply chain, and all of that. So yeah, we're not in a good spot, strategically speaking, logistically speaking, not in a good spot at all. What else do we got here? Tehran is currently in the process of scrambling to stock up on food. There are lines at supermarkets and gas stations. I'm hearing from people that CBRN equipment is flying off the shelves. Of course, you can still get that at CanadianPreparedness.com. Pretty much anything you need for prepping, we have, from freeze dryers to the highest powered flashlights to various types of weapons, with the exception, of course, of firearms, to food storage, things like Mylar, desiccant packets, oxygen absorbers, everything. We got it all. CBRN gear, gas masks, hazmat suits, Geiger counters. We have the best Geiger counter in the world, made right here in Canada, in our city, in our warehouse, in fact, by our resident nuclear physicist. So go and get that stuff at CanadianPreparedness.com, because when the Israelis finally do mount their response, I think it's going to be big. And I think all this talk about whether or not they're going to do it is just paying lip service and keeping the Iranians guessing, maybe sussing out what the public opinion is going to be. But when Netanyahu realizes that his time in office is limited unless he retaliates, that's just unfortunately more incentive for them to start something. Another thing to consider is that this launching of missiles allowed the Iranians to collect a lot of data on the missile defense systems of the Israelis and the Americans. Okay, so now they have a data set that they can leverage. They were firing missiles of all different types at different altitudes, and now they have a gauge of where the weak points are, what the capabilities are, and now they can course correct accordingly. Just like the Russians were able to ultimately course correct. And again, when you are, we have to view this in a different way, because most people are just seeing, well, what targets did they hit? Hitting an interceptor that costs 10 to 20 times the amount is a hit, okay? So when the Iranians fire a Shahed drone and it costs the Israelis 20 times the amount to take out that drone, that's a hit, because they just wasted a lot more money and resources than the Iranians did. If the Iranians tomorrow sent over 1,000 Shahed drones and they all got shot down, you would hear on the news networks, oh, it's a victory, and the incompetent Iranians unfortunately suffered defeat at the hands of the Israeli superior missile defense. But did they? Did they really, from a logistical strategic point of view? No, it was a complete loss. So it's a hit. So we need to understand missile defense. Just because you intercept a missile, you may prevent it from hitting a higher value target. But maybe, you know, that Shahed drone would have hit a building that only cost $100,000, but you just wasted $500,000 interceptor on it. So this is how we need to understand the calculus of war. But from the Western point of view, we want Pyrrhic victories. And while it is a successful feat to be able to intercept something and prevent something from hitting, and it also acts as a bit of a deterrent, it's not a complete victory, especially if it costs you more to do it than the guy who was launching the drone or the missile in the first place. So something to think about, guys. I would strongly encourage you, stock up while you can, because this is only going to increase in terms of its severity and intensity. And, you know, I'm surprised. I'm honestly surprised. Well, I'm not surprised, because, you know, this is the nature of the manipulated markets and manipulated minds of the masses that we're currently in, that you could have something happen just 24 hours ago, not even 24 hours ago, and already people are adapted and acclimated to it, and it's no big deal anymore, and everything is just going to be fine. I assure you that the people who provoked this whole thing in the first place have a plan. They know it's not going to be fine, and yeah, let's just see. Time will tell, but I'm 99% certain that shit's going to go sideways even more than it is now, and that's not a hard prediction to make, but for some people require convincing. You can lead people to information, but you cannot make them think. Thanks for the support, guys. Go check out CanadianPreparedness.com. Get the gear while the getting's good.
That report brought to you by Robin Westerner, and you'll find him at SeymourRocks.substack.com. Seymour is spelt S-E-E-M-O-R-E, Rocks, R-O-C-K-S, Substack, SeymourRocks, Substack.com. Weather is next.